The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
They are words that we use every day. Lake Michigan, Milwaukee, so much a part of our identity in southeastern Wisconsin. But where do those words come from? On this edition of UWM Today, we learn about the Anishinaabe language used by Native Americans from the Ojibwe, Potawatomi, and Odawa tribes. Our guest today is Meg Newton. Meg is the Assistant Professor of English at UWM and Interim Director of the Electa Quinney Institute on campus. Meg also teaches the language of Anishinaabe to students at the university. And she is someone, as we'll hear in a moment, who is passionate about preserving a major part of the culture of Native Americans in our region. Welcome, Meg. Great to have you with us today.
Good morning.
I'm so glad that you are using the language because I want to hear more of that in the course of our conversation. Just to satisfy the curiosity, I'm sure, of our listeners, I said Michigan, Lake Michigan, mm-hmm. and Milwaukee come from the language. What's the definition?
Well, we use Chigaming for a term that really means the kind of the Great Inland Sea. So we often say to our students early on when our students who are both Native and non-Native come to the class and they think about why they're learning the language, one really great reason is to learn to think differently. And like our friends at the School of Freshwater know, the Great Sea that we live by is actually a network of bodies of water. So we say Chigaming, whether you're on the shores of what's Lake Superior in English or whether you're on the shores of what's Lake Erie, we would traditionally call all of that Chigaming, which right from the get-go has you thinking differently about water, ecosystems, and just the place that we're from.
And also the fact that Native Americans realized that it was a huge network. It was not just some water alongside the shore.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a way to move around. The riverways were important. Where it shifted to swampland was important. Where the fish were able to get upstream, all those things were part of the system that was on one hand very cosmopolitan trade system, but also a way to get around.
So Michigan, the Great Sea, and mm-hmm. Milwaukee?
Yeah, Milwaukee comes from Minnewaukee. If you look back at old historical documents, you can see where the French began writing things down and letters were sometimes swapped a bit. But Minnewaukee in Anishinaabemowin means the good land. There are also other nations who are in the Algonquin language groups that have words very close to it. So you'll sometimes hear people say the gathering place. So they'll have slightly different interpretations of the word. And that may be because they are Meskwaki or Fox or they are a part of a nation that's related to us but not necessarily from right here.
I suspect a lot of our listeners may be surprised to hear that we are teaching these languages, this language, Anishinaabe, on campus, and it's regular courses. You can learn a lot about the language by attending UWM.
Yeah, exactly. We have over 500 students who part of their identity is Native American. They come from different nations. We have actually one of the strongest faculties in the 22 school system with a lot of us who would count Native connections as part of who we are. And so anything that we can do to have people looking at this place and doing top-level research and publication and education, but coming from an indigenous perspective is something important to all of us.
And yet for a lot of us who haven't heard the language much, if at all, we may be led to believe that because we don't hear it, that it is hardly used at all. But that's not the case with Anishinaabe.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think a lot of people, that's probably number one question. Are there still people that speak it? In our case, we had documentation for our language very early, late 1400s. We had people coming and writing things down. It wasn't commonly used by communities until the mid-1800s. So we have a long tradition of literacy, and we still have thousands of speakers. Many of them are much farther north right now. But even here in Milwaukee, UWM hosts hosts a Ojibwe language table Monday nights at the Urban Ecology Center. And we've had, I think, over 35 people kind of come and go, sit in, learn a little, and use it. And a couple of the regulars are fabulous storytellers now. So it's fun to hear it in the city.
So do you have a dictionary filled with these words? Is there a different alphabet that you use?
We in the States area tend to use the Roman alphabet, and I think in some ways maybe we're lazy. We like to be able to just type and text, and my daughters will text me in the language. You know, so it's easy to use the Roman alphabet, but there is a syllabics alphabet based on kind of a set of shapes for each sound that's very, very popular in Canada. And we've had dictionaries for a long time. One of the earlier dictionaries, Father Baraga, of course, did an early dictionary, which we sometimes still consult. But there are now maybe three or four different kind of, not competing, but different dictionaries that our students turn to. One of them is online. That is, you know, they can click and hear the words. And so there's a lot of resources out there for us now.
How did you get interested in this language as part of your profession, teaching it, studying it?
Well, I grew up in Minnesota, which is a state that has a Lakota name, but the northern part is the place where my family comes from, and so we were always surrounded by that language and those traditions and that culture, and so many of us really wanted to see that survive. We wanted to hear the language in the next generation. We didn't want it to just be something that the elders were using and that we didn't have permission to use. Many of the elders who survived kind of the forced assimilation in boarding school didn't want to use the language. And there was a time when the elders felt, we don't want to teach the kids because they'll not succeed educationally. So I guess that kind of ties to early on, my undergraduate degree was in teaching. And so...
So you were rebellious, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And my parents definitely instilled that in me. We were all around and watched everything that happened in the American Indian Movement with the other civil rights movements in the U.S. I think there were things that changed and doors that opened. Those are things that we actually have some of our classes focus on campus. People can kind of learn those histories of activism and change and politics in the U.S. And I really like teaching. I mean, I come from a family of teachers, and so to work with students constantly myself and train other teachers is part of what I wanted to do.
Are most of the students who take the Anishinaabe language courses that we teach, are they Native American themselves, or are they from other backgrounds? Not at all Native American, Polish,
Slovak. It's a real mix. And I would say at the Electoquinny Institute, where we focus on Native education, it's really that combined viewpoint. So on one hand, it's education for Native people of all ages, whether we're helping them succeed in kindergarten, eighth grade, or defending their tenure case. But it's also how do we help people educate about Native culture, language, and history, too. So we have a lot of partners that are not Native. Their classes may not be totally focused on Native history, but they work with us to either learn the language because it's a complementary way to view the world they're in, or maybe they're working with foreign students who say, what is this place? How do I understand it? So we have a lot of partners across campus and in Wisconsin who want to learn it because it's where they are. And some are tribal members, but not all of them are.
Yeah. What about the tribes themselves here in Wisconsin? You know, I mentioned the Potawatomis, the Ojibwes, Odawa. Are they focused on preserving the language through programs such as yours at UWM, or are they doing their own thing in their native on the reservations?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, with the Native Languages Act in the 1990s, it became legal for people to publish and use the language. So literally, I worked at a publisher who held a dictionary back until that legislation passed in the 1990s. And then you saw much more happening in terms of education and curriculum and exchange. And most nations now understand how much language is a part of their identity. If you want to know what it means to be Potawatomi, Bodawe is to start a fire. So as you drive by in Milwaukee and you see the Potawatomi and there's that flame, to know that their name actually means keepers of the fire is something that you would get from learning the language. So a lot of nations now are working on using the language more, getting it in their schools. Some of them have tribal schools that they run, and they definitely have languages in those settings. Some of the nations have kids attending public schools, and in Wisconsin, we have good partnerships there. So there's always more we wish was happening, but I think that you do see good partnerships between the tribes and the public education system as well.
Talk about Electa Quinney Institute, located on campus. I'd like to learn, first of all, who was Electa?
Yeah, that's a fabulous question. So Electa Quinney was a Stockbridge Muncie woman who was literally the first public school teacher in Wisconsin. So when Wisconsin was becoming, changing from a territory to a state, she was the first public school teacher because her tribe was the first to actually provide public education. So regardless of, you know, whether it was Native education or not, she was engaged in education in this state early on. So we wanted to recognize that she had leadership there. And the institute itself is endowed by the Milwaukee Indian Community School, which is an amazing school that we recently had visitors nationally come to and look at as a model for Native education. And I think people don't always realize what they have in their backyard, because right here we have a real cosmopolitan crossroads of tribes. So at the Indian Community School, for example, you have children learning Menominee, Ojibwe, and Oneida, and they're looking to possibly add Ho-Chunk soon. So that would give people here in Wisconsin a sense of some of the major languages that are still being spoken, and hopefully have kids go forward in the future learning some of those and really thinking about these places in a different way.
So the Institute at UWM really serves as sort of the crossroads where you bring all the nations together.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we have connections to that particular school with whom we have an endowment agreement, and it's been a really great working relationship there. And we also have strong connections to the Milwaukee Public School System, where they have a First Nations office. Things always change there, so hopefully I'm saying that right. But we have over 1,000 Native students in the Milwaukee Public Schools. And to serve and make sure that they are getting the best success and opportunity and moving on, I always like to say I want to see all of you on campus one day. We really try to connect to the K-12 environment. That's a big initiative of ours. We don't want to just wait and see if they get to college. We want to make sure that early on that, you know, we're building alliances between Native and non-Native students, between Native and non-Native teachers, and helping the students prepare for college and really think about what they can do. And it should be something they find meaningful, like learning their language.
When a student comes in to either the center to learn more about what you do in terms of helping Native Americans and keeping that culture alive, or in your classroom when they come in and take that class, how do they change? Do you see differences in their attitudes after they spend some time learning the language or understanding the work that's being done to support and sustain the culture itself?
I think so. I mean, I think that learning the language really connects people to place. I know that there's a lot of basic notions people have about Native Americans and connections to place and nature. And sometimes that's all that people know. They'll think, well, if I want to understand place, maybe I should learn some Native history. But when people really start learning the language and they start realizing how animals were described, how the water is described as something animate when we talk to the water, or we think about the water and the trees as ones that we would work with to improve all of our environment, it's really a different way of thinking. So it gives us ways to think differently about physics, about aquaculture, about poetry, about history. And we try to show all the students that what this is just like if you read French theorists or you read American historians, when you think through indigenous languages, it gives you another way to view the world.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Meg Newton. Meg is the Assistant Professor of English and Interim Director of the Electa Quinney Institute on the UWM campus. And we're talking about the fabulous work that she and the Institute are doing, in this case, continuing the Anishinaabe language, which is sort of the foundation of how people who preceded us here in Milwaukee talked and described the world around them. Could you share or use some of the language? I'd like to allow our listeners to hear the rhythm or the flow of the language. Talk about today's weather and what it is that we see unfolding with spring here. Can you put a few words to that?
Sure. One of the things we often teach students is that our way to talk about weather, we say, which is literally what's happening outside. We don't really have a term, a noun sort of term for weather. So the way you might answer that is to say, Zigwan, it's spring. You might say, Gizis Zagiasage, which would mean the sun is shining. And the way that you're saying that indicates that the sun is animate, that has the ability to shine or not shine, to be sort of on or off, you know, to give, be giving, have that warmth visible to us. And you can have all kinds of conversations, you know, from the language about what we know about the world. The other thing, if we want to wake people up who are listening, if we were to stand out on the shore today, I always like to look at the lake in the morning. Our campus is so close to the water. It's a wonderful thing. And in Milwaukee, there are all kinds of water commons efforts, the Freshwater Institute. We have many really great partnerships there. And one of the things that I sometimes get the opportunity to do is go out on the Niske, which is a boat that has a Ho-Chunk name at the School of Freshwater. And the captain there, we had taught a song. So I'll give you like a tiny bit of that just for something different. Nihibigizagigo gamigwechwenenimigo gajawenenimigo. And that's a song that we have a lot of people singing all throughout the Great Lakes, and we've shared it at different gatherings. And I always like it because I can go to Ontario and people recognize it. I can go to Manitoba, people recognize it. And it really just says to that water, we really love you and thank you, and you just bless us with your existence. So it's something where we kind of make connections using the language, and when we think about the world through the language, it just gives us another way to see things.
When I hear people use Native American languages, I get a shiver up my back sometimes. There's something so lyrical and yet very earthy about it. I'm not sure if I'm describing it the way you see it, but there's something that is so, I feel it is such an honest way of expression. Is that a feeling unique to me? Do we all hear language and feel things differently? Or would you say that matches the way that you see the language?
Well, I have to be careful. I have a lot of colleagues in the less commonly taught language area that we would all say all of our languages in the world are so important. I mean, linguistic diversity. There are some for whom English, I'm sure, does the same thing. For us, it may feel common. But languages really do that. They can express a culture and identity in a way that's very different, just the way art can, architecture can. Anything like that can give you layers of meaning that are sometimes intangible, I think. And I feel the same way. I mean, I obviously love speaking Anishinaabemowin, but it's been great to be here. I've had to learn a little Oneida when I go to the school. I have to say Segoli or Yauko to the people I work with there. And Menominee, they speak that as well there. And it's really, I think, great for all of us to realize how one or more languages can just really be something you can enjoy. It's like having another way to hear things, another, almost like a hobby, something else you can learn. I think a lot of people feel languages might be too hard, but when you start to pick them up, they can really be rewarding.
Well, in our case, because we live in Wisconsin, this mm-hmm. wonderful state that was occupied for eons before the white man came by the Native Americans, and to make that connection as you enjoy the walks through the Ice Age Trail or up north in Door County, knowing that hundreds of years ago, Native Americans discovered and occupied and lived here, you could almost feel those echoes of the past around you or hear them.
And it's really great to understand the diversity that we enjoy here, too. So in Milwaukee, it's really a crossroads. You have the Menominee Nation, whose creation story puts them right where they still are, which is fabulous. And then you have nations who moved here. The Anishinaabe were slightly east and migrated many thousands of years ago to live up along the southern shore of the Great Lakes and lived in and around where the Menominee were for many, many thousands of years. And then with colonization, you had the Oneida, the Stockbridge, Munsee, Mohican people moving here, and the Potawatomi were moving around in this area as well. People don't always realize what these patterns, these intertribal patterns were, because they think now, well, the Potawatomi are in Crandon. But they have relatives up on Manitoulin Island. There are, you know, Potawatomi in Michigan. There are Potawatomi in Kansas. And so it's really fun to have students sometimes who grew up in Milwaukee, and they know, for instance, they're Potawatomi. But for them to realize that history is pretty complicated, it connects to other nations, there's a language that relates to it, it's really rewarding to see people realize how rich the history is around here.
Has there been a lot of intermarriage between members of the tribes?
Yeah, there definitely has. I think it's a little bit like when you look at the Polish and Irish and other cultures that are here in Milwaukee, too. If you start talking to any of our students on campus, boy, their backgrounds are just so complex, and their identities are so layered and very, very rich, and we always want them to celebrate all of that. In this area, the Ho-Chunk are one of the other nations that are well represented in the area as well, and their language is another completely different family. There's no cognates. It's a completely different language. So you sometimes find students in our class who are learning Anishinaabemowin, but they actually also are Ho-Chunk and maybe a little Oneida. And because of the way our nation is, we have people here who are also Navajo, who are, you know, their origin is Diné, and that's a different history for them. We have Arapaho. We have, I'm trying to think of some of the people that I've specifically met here, but there's many, many nations represented in our city.
Earlier this spring, the New Yorker magazine did a wonderful, wonderful essay on the disappearance of languages. There are about 7,000 languages in the world today, and I believe, if I recall this correctly, that each year about 200 to 300 of those languages either disappear or are on the cusp of disappearing because people simply don't know how to use the words anymore. The people who do speak the language are dying off. Is that a risk here in Wisconsin with our Native American languages?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's very much a risk. There's so many things. It's a great topic that you've brought up. I'm trying to make sure I mention the right connections, but I would be remiss if I don't mention our colleague on campus as well, Bernie Perley, who is Maliseet. Maliseet is another Algonquin language, and he's worked tirelessly with his nation, and his mother in particular is an amazing storyteller, and he recently had an installation on campus, which we've now moved to the school to kind of get UWM work out into the community, where he had the Maliseet prayer and written out in his language, and then we translated into Oneida and Anishinaabe and Menominee. But all of us knew that really our resources are our elders, and we really have to work to make sure that our children, the students who are younger than us, are proficient, because it's pretty easy to introduce a language to a lot of people. And what we have as a real challenge before us is to have young people feel there's a reason to use the language and really become proficient and fluent in the language.
Are there a lot of similarities between the Native American languages?
There are multiple families of languages. So the way you might find cognates in the Romance languages, so it might be that when you're learning French, you feel like, oh, I recognize a few words, or you might learn Spanish or Italian, and you start to see that these are languages in a family. That's definitely the case with the Algonquin languages. There are 26. So when Bernie's speaking Maliseet, it's a little recognizable now and then, and Menominee connects as well for us. But Ho-Chunk is another completely different language. Nothing there ever sounds familiar to us. The same with Oneida. It's an Iroquoian language. So nothing is familiar. And it's amazing to watch as we teach them. Renee out at the Indian Community School was teaching a young man how to talk about his relatives. And the way he had to do it was so particular and so unique, because in his language, there are inflections for gender and relationships that our language doesn't even have. So it's just amazing to see how many different ways you can understand being in the world through different languages.
Well, and to me, it's even more amazing that that these languages still exist. I mean, if one person passing away could take that history with her or with him.
Yeah, it really is. I'm sure he would be embarrassed. But one of our students on campus, Bryce Stevenson, comes from a Wisconsin community up north, and his nation has stated they have no more speakers. So he sits in our class knowing that he is now the only person in his nation that is actively working to learn the language. And I always tell him, Bryce, you're going to have to go teach. And there may be other students his age, maybe at UW-Superior, learning it. We have the same languages also taught at Eau Claire. So there might be more in that generation, but they're few. And there are nations now that have had to admit we have no more speakers. So it at that point, I think, does take on a level of importance that's different than just, well, I'll do my foreign language requirements. It has a little more social meaning, I think, for some students.
Are there any efforts made to capture the people speaking these languages in audio form so that you do have a history to go back to?
Yeah, that's another thing I should say. Before I came to UWM, I knew of the archives that were here. So actually in the 70s, there was a huge effort and a few linguists worked with the different nations. And we actually have on our campus here in the digital archives some amazing recordings. So we can play in class, for instance, a little story where an elder talks about fishing using a frog as bait. And they hear that all in the language and they know they're hearing the voice of someone who was born in the late 1800s, recorded in the 70s, and that's a type of storytelling I wouldn't be able to give them now. So UWM had the Wisconsin Native Language Project quite a while ago, and there's some work that's also done in Madison that's significant as well to work with the Menominee and the Potawatomi. So we try from a university standpoint to support the community efforts, and then some of us are kind of bridging both worlds, working in communities and at the universities as well.
For listeners who are interested in learning more about the languages, about the Native American culture, they can connect with the Electa Quinney Institute.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We have links on the Electa Quinney Institute page. I have also run a website for a number of years, the Ojibwe.net website, which is Ojibwe.net. And we've had a lot of fun there, and you can just connect. You'll see people all over Facebook. I think one of the funniest things was during the recent Super Bowl, we posted what you could yell while watching the game in the language, you know, Ijada, or whatever you might say. And we had, I think, 10,000 people look at that.
That's fabulous.
So it's in some ways rewarding to know that that many people are willing to dip into the language and be excited by it, enjoy it, and share it with each other.
And it's so rewarding for us to be able to hear you describe the work that you and your colleagues are doing at UWM. And we wish you the very best so that you may continue the preservation of such an important part of our past.
Gamugwachin, Tom. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Meg Newton, an assistant professor of English and the interim director of the Electa Quinney Institute at UWM, talking about her work in teaching and preserving Native American languages, especially the Anishinaabe language. That's it for this edition of UWM Today. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.